Welcome to this week's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Happy belated Father's Day to everybody. Dave and I have a bad habit of getting rolling on stuff, and then we forget And full disclosure, man, I've been my last... Well, that's not true. I'm going to Canada in October, but my last big trip out of the way, Dave, did the my wife's side of the family, did their family trip, hit the West Indies, Turks and Caicos, Dominican Republic, and then ended in the Bahamas, then back to Florida, back home. It was awesome. I'm burnt.
Oh, I bet.
I'm just burnt.
I bet. Yeah.
And I told Dave, before we started the show today, you got to keep me honest with this stuff, Dave, because I understand that basically I'm very, very fortunate. And the first 6 months of this year has been more than most people get in a lifetime. And I've been super fortunate, but it is getting to that point where I've been griping about it, like, my typical curmudgeonly self. And I realize, man, I got to quit that because it just makes me sound like a spoiled a-hole. It was amazing.
You've had some really good,
it's been cool, man.
Good adventures so far this year.
Yeah. So anyway, happy belated Father's Day. We did not mention that on the last episode. A little bit of housekeeping. I've gotten a bunch of emails, and some of them were downright snarky, Dave, about social media. I snoozed the Nevada Backcountry Instagram account. I'm going to snooze this. Here's the God's honest truth. I got a couple that were like, so you're blocking people now? No, nobody is blocked. I found myself checking Instagram at like 4:45 in the morning. Like, I would get up, I would have my coffee, and it would be the first thing I'd open on my phone.
Yeah, I've done that too much myself. I've got to stop.
Okay, well, and then here's the other thing. It would be the last thing I checked at night before I went to bed.
Oh, yeah.
I'm laying in bed at like 9 o'clock at night scrolling it. Anyway, I had this whole, I'm at that age now, call it a midlife crisis, call it an existential crisis, call it what you will. But I went, when this thing has so much power over me that it's the very first thing I check in the morning and the very last thing I check as a father to four kids and a husband, I'm like, man, this is taking my, and I have one more, I'll piggyback on this. Think of me what you will. I followed some fitness stuff on there. I get served up basically, let's call it adultery light, nonstop with the females working out. And that was the final straw. Hey, I'm a human being, but when I'm starting my day watching a fit 20-year-old do squats in these yoga pants that cup the butt cheek on Instagram, and I'm like, that's how I'm starting my day and that's how I'm ending my day. Man, something is broken in my brain and I got to hit the reset button here. So
I'm with you because I literally doing the same thing, especially with the workout stuff. I search like, hey, I want to do a kettlebell circuit now. And then the stuff that comes up, they're using kettlebells. It's just... Yeah.
What they're wearing to use is something else.
Oh, but no, I'm with you on the Instagram thing.
Yeah, man. So
what's going on in social media?
I snoozed it. So there were, like I said, I think I'm at 7 or 8 now emails that came in.
What's going on?
Yeah. Well, like I said, a couple of them were like, we're blocking, because they must have searched and couldn't find the account.
Oh.
And we're like, so we're blocking people now. No, I'm not blocking anybody.
I just put it on hold.
I snoozed the account because, again, I know me.
Yeah.
And I know how I'm wired. And I just, man, if I'm starting my day with that and I'm ending my day with that, something in there in my wiring is broken. And I just had to take a break from it. And so I snoozed the account.
Yeah.
So sue me. I'll probably start it back up again during the season because I do like getting on there and posting stuff. But just for me, it was a bit much. No, I didn't block anybody. I just snoozed the account. So
done.
There we go. Now moving on. Let's go. Something in the news lately, Dave, and you can probably speak more eloquently on this than I can.
Too much credit.
All right. Well, the open fields doctrine.
Yes.
And this is I'll soapbox. I have always made the argument that I didn't like hunters. You are essentially, the second you buy a hunting license, you are guilty until proven innocent. You waive some search and seizure rights. Basically, you also waive some Fourth Amendment rights with this open fields doctrine stuff. And I never liked that, that essentially you were looked at from the moment you bought a license, not maybe not in the eyes of a game warden, but in the way game laws are structured, you essentially are guilty until proven innocent is the way I always framed it. I know technically that's not exactly accurate, and we are going to get a game warden on the show at some point.
Yes.
Which I'm looking forward to, because I would like to ask him about this stuff. However, open fields doctrine, you want to lay out what that is, Dave?
Well, generally, it's any land outside the immediate area surrounding your home.
Bingo.
So technically, open field doesn't necessarily mean open field. It could be a forested area. It could be, you know, elements like that. So it's not technically like open field. It's just areas outside of your home.
Right.
Not fenced in. Well, they're fenced in.
Fenced in. You can even have it posted.
Yeah,
no trespassing.
But a game warden can cross it without a warrant.
Yes.
If they feel there's something illegal in relation to wildlife and hunting regulations going on.
And that's why it's in the news, if they feel.
Correct.
So the case, what was it, Arkansas?
There's a few.
Oh, there's a few. Okay.
There's a few, but I think the latest one is the one from Arkansas.
Yeah, and that's why it's in the news. So basically, it doesn't even meet the benchmark for like probable cause, essentially.
Right.
If they were a traditional law enforcement officer. So they could say, oh, it's, let's say turkey season, and they hear a couple gunshots from a stretch of private property.
Yeah.
They don't need to present any of this to a judge to get a warrant. They don't need, right there in the moment, the game warden can make the decision to cross a private property boundary and
that
go.
That could be marked.
That could be marked. No trespassing. Bingo. And quote unquote, investigate.
Yes. Yes. To verify.
Just because it's turkey season and they heard gunshots.
Yeah. And they have the. They've got that ability to go into your camp.
Absolutely.
Check your coolers, inspect your camp, search your vehicles, search your game bags.
And here's the kicker.
And containers, and you know, they can seize even the possessions, wildlife, animals that you've harvested and stuff.
Right. Well, here's the kicker to that I want to point out. So they can go into your camp, they can go into your cooler, they could even peek inside your tent.
Yeah.
Do you have to be there?
Oh, that's a good question.
You do not.
You don't?
You do not. If they suspect a game violation has occurred.
Oh, yeah, because the part that's protected underneath this open field is like your house and attached structures.
Right, your domicile.
Yeah, your shed. If it's enclosed by a fence and it's within proximity of your house or a shed or a building, they can't cross that fence. They can't go through that gate or anything like that. And that's where that open field thing, it has to be a certain distance away from a dwelling, a shed, a building, a garage, stuff like that.
So this is the big thing with the camp aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
Now, they can't enter your vehicle. They can't do any of that, right? Unless...
No, they can search your vehicles.
Well, right. Without you present, unless they find evidence of a game violation in camp. Yes. And this is what I'd love to talk to, because this is just Henry Evans reading this.
Yeah.
Right? But essentially, you're on public land, or even if you're on private land, you're hunting, you have a hunting license, you are engaged in the take of game, right? And that is where essentially you've waived search and seizure rights and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So they can look in your tent, they can look around your camp, they can mosey around.
Find something that they feel is a violation. Say they open up your cooler and there's two hindquarters in there, but there's no tag.
No tag on
it. It's just two hindquarters.
Yeah.
No paperwork, no nothing, which is supposed to be in the cooler.
Yep.
Yes, then that probably allows them that gives them enough information and evidence to like, okay, we need to search everything now.
Bingo.
And now we can go into your trailer, your car, your truck, your UTV.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Anything used in the illegal take of game.
Of game.
Yeah.
They can seize it.
Oh, bingo.
As well as, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why this is in the news. And I mean, especially as a hunter, I'd like to think of myself as an ethical hunter. I still just don't like that essentially you waive a whole bunch of your rights when you purchase a hunting license and you step into the field, or you even step into the back 40 of your property that you own.
Yeah. And I don't even know if it has to be a situation where they hear gunshot in the distance and like, hey, let's go see if that's illegal.
What's going on up there? Yeah.
So part of the short answer to a lot of this for, you know, game wardens across the West is that they can cross like a no trespassing sign. They can cross gates, go over fences, and they can even perform, as long as they're doing something in the official performance of their wildlife enforcement duties.
Yeah.
So that doesn't even have to be warranted. It's not like, hey, I saw two dudes in camo go through the trees over there. That warrants me to go on this property. It sounds like they can just go on it if they want to, because they're performing their duties. They're doing a search of a hunting area during the hunting season.
Right.
To see if there's hunters there. It'd be great to get the game warden on here and have a chat.
So we got to take a quick break, folks. Thank you to our show sponsors, Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, and Truck Envy. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, and Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Couple things, again, on the, like I said, that first segment, been doing a bit of waltzing Matilda lately, so I got to check in and make sure there's still a few hats over there at Rightful Liberty Arms. After you go to Rightful Liberty Arms, you pick up your box of ammo, you get your free Nevada Backcountry hat. Sign up for Jim Irwin's Shooting Performance Institute Intro to Long Range course. That is August 1st and 2nd. So do not miss out on that. Support the sponsors that support this show. Oddly enough, when I was about to take off for the East Coast, who should be sitting there but Jim Irwin? So Jim messed around with my kids and we got to go through security together and laugh because he got popped. My kids and I and Cynthia, we all made it through, and something,
you got the old rub down.
Something Jim got dinged on something.
Yo, bummer.
So anyway, hey, August 1st and 2nd are the dates. Sign up for that Intro to Long Range course and make sure you are as dialed as possible before you head out if you got one of those coveted Any Legal Weapon tag. A last little bit on the open fields doctrine, Dave, as we were talking over the break, the way I understand it and the way I read the law essentially is if you have like a cooler out at camp or like a tent or whatever, if it is not secured inside your vehicle, locked inside your vehicle, essentially a game warden, as part of the scope of their duties, investigating whatever or just, you know, performing their duties as far as game management, wildlife law enforcement, can open your cooler, peek inside your tent, you know, see what's going on. If it's locked in your vehicle, they can't touch it. They could still look through the windows, you know.
Yeah.
However, once it's outside of your vehicle, it's sitting there on public land, they
It's not a lock on it.
And
or
it's
something.
Not a lock, yeah. Right? They can, especially those like Yetis have the two toggle things.
Yeah, yeah.
They could pop that sucker, look in there. Okay. Yeah. Go on about their business.
Just because it's closed doesn't mean no entry.
Bingo.
It has to be locked.
Bingo. And that really, really bothers me. You know, it's like getting a federal tax stamp to have a class 3 weapon, right? A fully auto or a suppressed weapon. You waive some rights when you get that federal tax stamp.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's like if I buy a hunting license and I draw a hunting tag and I'm out hunting, I now have to accept that I have waived some of my constitutional rights to partake in this activity. And that to me just seems insane. I still do it because I'm an addict. And I can't stop doing it. I'm still going to hunt. I'm not going to quit on principle.
Yeah.
But it just seems insane to me. And that's why I'd love to sit down and talk with a game warden and have one of these conversations where it's like, hey, this strikes me as weird, man.
Yeah.
What do you think? So anyway, hopefully we get a game warden soon.
Oh, we will. We will. We'll get one on here, especially with all this stuff
happening.
What,
anything else on the open field stuff, Dave?
No, not really. I think you pretty much nailed it there.
All right, I've summed that up.
Let's talk about ground blinds, because I know there's a lot of folks that either have already put up ground blinds at water holes or grazing areas or what have you, and especially for antelope, I'm sure there's already been a ton of people out there. There's a lot of conversation out there going on about you can only do this with your ground blind. Oh, you can't do that, but you can do this. There's a lot of chatter.
Do you want to read the actual reg? Did you bring the reg with you?
The actual regulation?
The actual regulation as regards to in regards to ground blinds?
I did not bring the actual NRS.
Oh, okay, okay.
I have my summary of it.
Okay, we'll get into the summary. I was always under the impression that you could not have, now you could construct a natural blind. You cut a limb here, drag this, so drag that.
There's actually a regulation against that.
I've never done that in my life, and I would do that.
Yes, you've only heard about it. I've seen it on videos.
Yeah, exactly. YouTube.
Yeah, so
magical place.
Like on public land, BLM, Forest Service and stuff.
Right.
You are not allowed to damage any vegetation or construct a permanent blind by cutting trees, limbs, excavating without permits from the land management agency. So,
yo, buddy.
So there's several blinds that I have come across over the many years. There's one.
Several doesn't even begin to cut it, Dave.
Doesn't even cut it. There are a few out near Ely for cow hunting, elk hunting, what have you, deer.
Yeah.
That have been there for decades. There are a few that are every year, I don't know who does it, someone goes out there, cuts some more trees down, and builds basically this one location. It's got T-posts all over the place with fencing all around it, and then against the fencing, they wire brand new cut branches and sage. From what these regs are, that is absolutely illegal.
I'll just be flat
out. This blew me away, too, when I was reading it earlier, when I was reading it before, when we were talking about agenda topics. I was like, oh, man, that's...
I've never been in an elk unit in the state of Nevada without coming across multiple, what I call like natural. Yeah, there will be T-posts and baling wire and maybe some hog wire. I call them like a natural built blind.
Yeah.
Nope. I don't know of an elk unit in the state that doesn't have those on it.
Nope. I agree. I was like, oh, that's new.
But Dave, again, not even elk units. I'll tell you right
there's
now.
There's antelope. There's deer. We were just out in my deer hunting area, and we were cruising along, and we went and checked a couple springs, and there's one spring there that it's old. It's probably used last year or something because everything's dead on it. But
right.
It's one that I've come across, oh, my gosh, I mean, since the 90s.
5 miles outside of town on the Truckee River, I know of two separate locations with two duck hunting blinds built into the vegetation alongside that have been there since the early 2000s.
Yeah. So that was one that I was like, oh, this is going to be a good segment.
Okay. Yeah. I'm learning something as we go here.
Yeah. So the other thing that we keep hearing from folks is, oh, yeah, you can't put your blind out more than a week before the hunt.
10 days, I thought. Yeah.
You can put it out whenever you want.
As long as
eventually remove it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, portable pop-up blinds are probably the most common. You can put them out whenever you wish.
And no matter what, whether it's National Forest, BLM, doesn't matter.
It just, part of the regulation just states if you're on BLM, Forest Service, or any public land and or private to contact the proper authority and or landowner to make sure that it's okay. Which, I mean, I doubt anyone really does that besides private land.
Yeah.
Because, you know, BLM, Forest Service, that's all public land. We all own it. But, yeah, you can put it up whenever you want, and you can leave it out there till your hunt's over, but it does have to come off the range when you're done with it. Here's the other kicker I was just reading about, which was, like, kind of blew me away.
I'm sitting here wide-eyed because I would have had both of these 180 degrees backwards.
I'm the same way. So even though you put the blind up and you put your name in it, like, hey, I'm Joe Schmo. I'll be hunting it during antelope season from August 1 to August 30th. Yeah.
Whatever, here's my number.
Here's my number, blah, 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 blah. That does not protect your blind from being used, and it is not illegal for somebody else to see your blind and say, sweet, I'm going in there in the
morning. They're not in it. I'm getting in it.
You bet. First person to it. Doesn't matter if it's your pop-up blind or anything. So
that's that personal property rights thing. Yeah. There's no such thing.
So think about this. Because that did happen to me on an elk hunt. I went to my blind with my nephew and got there, and there was a dude in it. Like, I was like, hey. He's like, hey. Like, we're having coffee.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, this is our blind, you know? And he's like, oh, I didn't see anyone using it. Well, yeah, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're not. But
you're not sleeping in the thing.
He was
man.
Cool. He got up and he left, mm-hmm. but he didn't have to. He could have said, yeah, well, tough dude.
This is mine now.
This is mine today.
It's like squatter's rights.
Right. So the kicker there is, say you get in an altercation now with this individual, yeah. and you end up getting in a fight and happen to beat
them. Somebody gets hurt or
beat
something.
Beat the
yeah,
snot
yeah.
out of him or something. You're the one who's going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So think about that when you're out there this year.
Whoa.
And you do walk into a blind. You're blind and somebody else is sitting in it. They have every right to get in that blind. Even though you built it, you put it up, you put your fancy little note in the bottle.
Yeah.
The whole nine yards. Yeah. I read that and I was like, oh,
so
dang.
Are you allowed to, or would it fall under, because there is an NRS thing in regards to interfering with the legal take of game? Would it be considered interfering with the legal take of game if you're like, yeah, yeah, no problem, man. You can, hey, like, stay there. Don't move. I'm going to just lift this blind. Me and my buddy are going to lift this over you, and we're going to take it with us. Or are you interfering with their hunt?
The only time that that comes into play is if there's animals present.
Okay, so if there's no animals present,
yeah.
you could kind of be a back to them
well,
and be like...
And that might start the altercation.
That's a good point. You're escalating the situation at that point.
Yeah, so that was when I was like, oh, man, I should read more regulations.
You and me both, Dave. Keep yeah. going. You're flipping the page.
I know.
What else do I not know about blinds in Nevada?
You know, those are the two big ones.
Okay.
You know, not allowed to use natural vegetation, can't cut down trees, limbs, rip out sagebrush. I think everybody, you know, besides you and I, are guilty of it.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Never. I mean, I've always come up to one that's already pre-done.
When I heard, why I went with baling wire, I don't know. It seems like something somebody would do. I heard that at one point, that somebody would use baling wire to kind of string together limbs and stuff.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, I've always, whatever's already been on the ground is the only thing I've ever used. So, yeah. So here's the statement. It says, the statewide timeline for the blind is there is no certain number of days before or after a hunt that a blind can be put up and used.
Hey, I'm looking at the clock now. We have got to take a break. Let's wrap up on this when we come back. Dave, do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. If you missed a segment of the show, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, and all the past episodes are available there. And we are always available on Apple Podcasts. I don't know if folks could tell, you know, you can't see me while we're doing the show, Dave, but I think my jaw was on the floor for most of that last segment when I just realized, like, a gun to my head, I would have told you the exact opposite. I would have said no. In fact, I told a friend of ours recently, and here's why I wanted to cover this on the show today. They said they were going out to set up a blind. And I said, oh, you got to be careful with that. With those pop-up blinds, they're not supposed to be out more than 10 days before your season. And he goes, no, that's not true. That's only on, and I can't remember, so I'll just say insert the blank. Nah, that's
wildlife
only on
management areas?
Yeah, that's something only like that. On national forests or something like that. And I went, oh, I didn't know there were distinctions between the two. I had always heard that that was the rule, is you can't set them up more than 10 days in advance of your hunt. I was wrong on that. I would have told you that, no, the only legal way to set up more than 10 days in advance of the hunt is if you construct a natural blind. Well, that's illegal, so you don't want to be doing that. What else on the blind thing?
So you're not totally wrong on the time frame in relation to. So a lot of this is you need to, depending on what you're hunting. So, like you were talking about the waterfowl blind that's down.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple well-known right. duck blinds on the truckie.
So, portable blinds used for anything other than big game have to be brought in and removed on the same day.
Okay.
So, for big game hunting, it's like...
Yeah.
Typical hunter will put out a blind anywhere from 3 weeks to a month prior to the hunt. Because people always say, oh, man, you got to get your blind out there so the animals get used to it, you know? And then it's just required that you remove it after your hunt is over. Permanent ones are not legal.
Yep.
Which, you know.
News to me.
News to all of us. And then, you know, another thing is it can't be a permanent blind that has a lock, and no blind is exclusive. What does it state here? No blind has exclusive use rights.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So your little,
I built this. It's mine.
Yeah. So your little bottle in there is saying, "Hey, this is my blind." Blah blah blah. That's great information, but it doesn't have any legal.
The end of the day, teeth. It doesn't. Yeah.
You know, but you know, the thing is a good, honest,
you might
respectful
not have
hunter.
Teeth by the time you finish, you know?
yeah, dude. You know, but your honest, respectful hunter is going to take that note, like we've all done a thousand times, and we'll call the number and say, "Hey, this is a great spot. When you're done, could you give me a call? I would like to use this spot." You
know, absolutely.
There's a conversation that goes, and if they say, "Hey, yeah, I'm going to be there next weekend. Okay, I'll stay out of the area next weekend so you can harvest, and then I'll jump in there the weekend after." And they're like, "Yeah, that's great." Usually there's everyone that I've ever contacted in relation to a blind has been super awesome.
That's been the dialogue. Yeah.
I've only had two really contentious jerks in the past that acted as if they owned the land and forbid me for being there
putting
or in
your
the
blind
area.
Up or
not
yeah.
even. I mean, one guy told me, "You better not even be in the area when I'm hunting out there." And I was like,
"You know, yeah."
That was one where you feel like, I think I might go out there and just like rip his blind down, but I didn't. Just being cool. The rest of all you always set up like, "Hey, yeah, no, I'm going to be here this weekend or this week."
Even
cool.
as recent as like your elk hunt, we were communicating with that guy who had a deer tag and had a pop-up blind.
Yeah.
And was like, "Let us know when you're out of there or if you don't mind." And he was like, "Oh, yeah, hey." Yeah. And start sharing, like, I think he asked you, "Hey, have you seen any good bucks in the area?" And then we, "Hey, have you seen any good bulls in the area?" And
And we were texting there for like 2 weeks or so. And
years
ago, my son, we built a blind, a pop-up blind.
Bingo.
For his antelope hunt where he shot that monster.
Oh, yeah.
And the week before that, we got a phone call from some random guy here in Reno that was like, "Hey, man, that's a great spot. Do you mind if I use the blind when you're done? Can you call me?" So we did. He shot it opening morning. I called him when we were heading home, said, "Hey, we harvested. I left the blind out there. It's all yours. Bring it to me when you're done. This is my phone number." He did. He came back. He showed me pictures of the antelope he shot, cleaned my blind, put it in the bag, gave it to me. That was that.
That's awesome.
You know? Didn't even know the guy.
That's been most of my experiences with fellow hunters, too.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had a real contentious situation with a ground blind.
No.
I generally don't hunt out of them or use them that much. That, like, perfect example, my daughter, Madeline, has that pronghorn tag this year.
Yeah.
The junior hunt.
Yeah.
You know, I got a shooting tripod, like a thing that you lock the gun into. And it's lightweight. I mean, it's a beefy sucker, but it's fairly lightweight. And instead of doing a blind, I'm just going to roll with that.
Yeah, that's...
I can slap it out. Her gun has an arca rail on front.
Yeah.
I can just throw it, lock it in there. She can pivot on the thing, but she's versus doing a ground blind for her.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
For the rifle, for like Gina, she's got the shorter than ears tag. We both do this year.
Yeah.
We're going to just cruise around out there and
bingo.
Stock up on something to good distance and
let her rip.
Let her rip.
Yeah. So I'm not a big ground blind guy, but man, I had these things backwards, Dave.
Yeah. So did I until now. You know. Yeah. So
gotta get a game worn on, because I'd love to ask it. Like, hey, we all know this stuff's out there. Like, why is this just unenforceable?
Yeah.
And if it's unenforceable, why does the law exist?
Exactly. Kind of like let offs. So then that leads us into game cameras.
Yes.
That's another one that people are constantly like talking about, the game camera thing. In the state of Nevada, all units have to be off of the landscape by
July 31st,
except for, and I just was reading this, if you're using the ones that send you a message.
Oh, the transmitting.
The
it's got
to
be June 31st, right?
June 30th.
Oh, 30th. No 31st. Why did I say?
Yeah. Well, in your world, maybe. You know, you've been traveling all over the world. Who knows what they got in New Guinea? What kind of calendar they've got. So those transmitting ones have to be
a month earlier.
Yeah.
Now, and this is the another thing, like when Dave and I text and we're like, "Hey, what do we want to do this week?" A lot of this stuff comes from personal experience or personal interactions. So I had somebody ask me about those transmitting game cams, and I had to, the only reason I know this, because I thought they were totally illegal in the state of Nevada. I didn't know you could even use those cell phone network.
I didn't know either. I thought those were illegal myself because a lot of Western states have outlawed them.
And so I told this person, no, you can't, don't waste your money on those. You can't even use them in the state. And they said something to that effect of, no, I think you can, but it's got to be, I'm like, is that right? So I went and looked it up.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I know and confidently know as I sit here today is because I just recently looked it up. I would have told you they were totally illegal. They're not.
I thought they were because Nevada is probably one of the most restrictive trail camera states out there.
Yeah.
What use is a trail camera for rifle season? You know, you're not hunting until October.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
what good does something footage in July?
Yeah, exactly. And some of the fines, once we get the game warden on, we'll have to, but I heard some of the fines, if your camera's still out there and they can tie it to you, they're pretty steep.
No kidding.
You lose hunting rights for like 2 and 3 years if it's still on the landscape and working. I've heard that coming across the tape, which again, we need to get a game warden on here and we'll have to talk with them. So
you mentioned something. I'm going to look at the clock. Yeah, we got a couple minutes. We'll kind of flesh this out a little bit. My wife has got a sheep tag. Doesn't open till November.
Yep.
I'm still putting trail cams out, and it's more just to figure out where the sheep herd is. Is this super valuable data come November? Nah, probably not, but it's a big range.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure that we are focusing our efforts, and look, I understand there's going to be winter range, there's going to be summer range, but there is only really one area in that unit where those sheep are.
Right.
And I just kind of want to figure out, like, okay, if they're down here during this, whatever. So, I'm still doing it.
Yeah. I use trail cameras, and, you know, we just put a few up where we're deer hunting not too long ago, like when we first had the tags or got told we had the tags.
Right.
But I put them in spots like bottlenecked canyons to see. My big thing is kind of like you. I want to see what's using this area right now.
Yeah.
Because I've been in areas before where I've gone back, grabbed my cameras, and it's nothing but elk.
Yep.
I'm like, well, then I'm not going to waste my time deer hunting here if all I'm seeing are groups of elk.
Yep.
So that's the benefit of that. There are restrictions to game cameras near water holes.
Oh, and they are what?
You can't be altering vegetation to funnel the animal in front of your camera.
There's creating an artificial bottleneck.
Correct, yeah. So if you've got multiple trails coming into the water hole, you can't put brush and tree limbs and crud in front of two or three of them so they only come down the one where your camera is.
Gotcha.
And you can't alter the water.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, they're pretty understandable, so...
Okay, hey, we'll go a little more on game cams when we come back. And then we also got to get into wolves in the news recently.
They're back in the news.
Final segment of Nevada Backcountry is coming up after the break. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. It's so good to be back in studio with Dave. Sincere thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Truck Envy, and Battleborn Tree Service for sponsoring the show. Make sure you guys hire someone to care for your property like it was their own. Give Mike and the gang a call at Battleborn Tree Service before you head out to fill that tag you got this season. It's been an eye-opener, Dave. I don't know if we should have done this show in hindsight, because I realize I did not have a very firm grasp of the regulations in the state. So last little bit on the game cam thing, as you were saying, you cannot modify. So like perfect example, trying to get the water to pool in a certain area in front of your camera or modifying pathways, any and all of that is illegal, which the modifying path I could see like, probably ought not. I don't want to call it leave no trace. My whole philosophy on this thing over the years has always been don't interrupt the natural travel of game animals. Don't
Correct.
Do that.
Correct.
You know, like I try to put my cameras in an area I think they're naturally using, try to put it on a spring far enough back that I can see every aspect of that and how the animals are coming in, but just don't really... I guess you could call it leave no trace. Like, I don't want them to know that I was there.
Yeah.
I just want to see what's moving through an area. That's been my philosophy. It's not exactly.
That's how I see it. I mean, granted, I open the water up a little so that it pools a little better.
Thank you, Dave. You know what, Dave? If you're going to throw that out there, I will too.
Yeah, because the cattle, I mean, they come in and they wreck the daylights out of some of these springs.
And horses.
And horses.
So
and
I have
horses.
I have taken a folding shovel and I've dug out, like, trying to make it so it's not a stamped out mud pit.
Yeah.
It is an actual water hole for
deer. Yeah, so it's a small little pool.
I feel like I'm improving the habitat or helping the wildlife that is
using.
The volume
of water that they can drink.
And this was so long ago, it's well outside of the statute of limitations.
Yeah,
for
I mean, I did that when I was 12.
Yeah. So,
and if you are out there during the time frame that it states cameras are not allowed to be out there, and there are cameras, a lot of cameras, so there are some stipulations. So,
Okay.
You can use cameras, you can't, but certain agencies and people, institutions, can use cameras year-round. As long as they are permitted and they're exempt from these regulations, which would be any end-out personnel that is conducting a study, any other governmental agencies, universities, and BLMs, other entities that are doing studies, and then individuals specifically approved by the Department of Wildlife to use these cameras within those timeframes for, again, doing wildlife research, as well as there are several camera stations that I know of that are monitoring vegetation growth.
For ranchers and ranchers operations.
And for areas where spent a significant 6-7 figures seeding areas.
Oh, the state
and
even?
Yes,
okay, gotcha.
Planting seedlings and saplings and stuff. Cameras, some of the camera systems out there will take a picture like once every week, once every 2 weeks. So
gotcha.
You can see like... Instead of having to drive out to these remote locations, you see on the camera like, oh, yeah, okay, these are doing well.
Hey, something's going wrong. This isn't,
right.
Yeah, we need to go check.
We gotta go check it out.
Yeah. Don't be a Karen and automatically assume that somebody's violating game laws because you see a trail camera out
right.
there.
Usually, a lot of those are generally, they'll be marked like
property of
government use only.
Right.
For those research purposes, but anyway.
Hey, keep your nose clean this season, everybody. And let's see. Oh, Dave, we got a little bit of time left. Wolves are back in the news.
Yes, they are. The wolf populations appear to be doing quite well.
Yes.
Quite well.
Kind of feel like some people said that.
Washington State has 49 packs now.
Yeah.
And growing rapidly.
Yeah.
Oregon is increasing with estimated over 200 wolves. California's, their packs are expanding
booming
right now. Yeah. Colorado just did a reintroduction, and the growth is uncertain because they just got released not too long ago. Idaho has over 1,300 wolves, and their population is increasing rapidly.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. However, I would guess, Colorado, your wolves are probably going to explode.
Yeah, they're probably going to do pretty well.
I mean, I'm just guessing based on...
Yeah. Well, Arizona and New Mexico are the only two states where the wolves are not doing well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so
New Mexico.
No, I'm sorry, not New Mexico. Those actually are doing incredibly well.
All right, there we go. All right, what about
Wyoming.
Arizona? Oh, Wyoming's.
Wyoming's wolves are declining due to disease. So they have a disease out there called canine distemper outbreak.
Oh, like you do the distemper parvo thing for your dogs.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so they 100%. Had, 330, 350 wolves previously. They're now down to about 250 wolves with only 14 breeding pairs. Those herds in Wyoming are starting to crash.
Gotcha. Packs.
Yeah. Packs. They're packs, yeah. Not the herds. Packs.
Okay, so Wyoming not doing, but otherwise.
Arizona and New Mexico, though, they have record populations.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yes.
I was going to say.
Sorry, I got those two mixed up.
I was going to say, having spent a little bit of time in elk country in New Mexico, the Gila Wilderness specifically, again, I'm not a biologist. I'm just your everyday dude, but I look around at some of that habitat and I go, holy smokes. Yeah. This is perfect
really
for wolves.
Good.
Yeah.
But they have been back in the news because
locally
because there's a lot more footage coming out in certain parts of the state where people are out scouting now and doing their stuff as well as trail cameras.
Yeah.
And folks are seeing more wolves.
Yes. And verifiable wolves.
And verifiable wolves, as well as there's been, you know, you still have those reports of wolves attacking livestock.
Right.
And primarily that in like Susanville area there and other parts of Northern California and in Oregon where they're having some issues. So they're...
Jarbidge is the one that I heard.
Yes.
That now there's footage in images from Jarbidge that confirmed these are wolves.
Yeah, like there's like four or five of them all cruising around.
Yep.
So currently there is no established breeding wolf populations in Nevada that we know of. That's going to be the kicker.
Yep.
With Oregon's and Idaho's populations just going haywire, and they're expanding. The ones in Oregon are expanding primarily south as well as a little bit east, but more south.
Yeah.
And that's Nevada.
I think they, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but didn't they, one of the data points is an Oregon wolf pack or a couple of them, tagged, collared, whatever, moving into like Siskiyou County.
Yeah.
Down there by Shasta.
By Shasta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are Oregon wolves coming down there.
Coming down.
So,
Yeah. You have the Arizona populations that are going berserk. So it's just a matter of time that Panaca, Pioche area, all of that.
Spreading across there. Mm-hmm. I'll make the same comment I made about the Gila Wilderness. Anybody that spent any time in Jarbidge, looking around.
Oh.
I mean, that looks like ideal wolf habitat to me. It's no surprise to me that we're starting to get pictures, and I wouldn't even be shocked if we get some video soon out of Jarbidge. From this season of wolves.
From this season,
Wolves.
It's just a matter of time. Like the article states is that Nevada is continually seeing occasional transitional wolves throughout the northern portion of the state.
Yep.
And we have not seen any established or consistently the same animals. They always seem to be different ones nomadically cruising through, but it is pretty well thought that eventually with all of these states around us, with their populations just going gangbusters, that Nevada will eventually document
a breeding, a pack. Yeah.
An established pack that stays in Nevada.
Well, there you go, folks.
Ending on a good note.
Yeah, that's going to do it for us.
Feral horses and wolves. Woohoo!
Oh, man. Hey, sincere thank you to all of you who take time out of your Sunday to listen to me and Dave. Do not go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.